Salvete, salvete omnis, fratres, sorores, felix dies solis. Mihi nomen Tony Trudest, et hospes tuus sum. Greetings everyone, brothers, sisters, happy Sunday, the day of the sun. My name is Tony Trudest, and I'm your host. I do apologize about huge delay, and I was literally running on CPT, the color people times, quite literally, just because of the traffic caused by some very diverse individuals on the freeway. So I'm not saying that the accidents wouldn't happen if we would live in 100% European societies, if we would live in countries consisting of 100% European descent. Accidents inevitably happen, but weirdly enough, they happen way too often because of certain characteristics. Either very uncautious driving, or reckless driving, or criminal behavior, escaping from law enforcement, things like that. It's far more often occurring among the population that gives us all the diversity and all the cultural enrichment. So this is how it goes. We have pan-European nationals, welcome brother. We have Holokov, welcome brother. And we have Edward Snowman with his Roman salute and a really nice investment of $20. Appreciate that, and Romans to you back, brother. On that note, FTJ right now is going to go into subscription mode only. The cost is primarily financial. It seems like such an endeavor, like a streaming platform, is obviously not a cheap thing, and there's just not enough resources to maintain FTJ otherwise, so they have to go into this. I don't know if they have to, but they just decided to activate the subscription mode only starting from June, meaning tomorrow. Today is the last day when people can use FTJ without being subscribed. I believe subscription is $5 a month, so that's not a big cost. Hopefully, many of good viewers will be able to afford it. And hopefully that will also help FTJ to maintain itself independent from the Jewish system, just like we used to be. I think that this in itself is a good proof of the fact that FTJ as a platform is actually not sponsored by some shady individuals, that there is no weird connections, and that there is no Jewish money involved in it. So that's how it goes. And also, I'm not sure how this subscription mode only will operate. I don't know what are going to be the limitations. Does it apply only to people being able to make comments in the chat, to be able to subscribe to others, or will it be invisible for people who are unsubscribed? I'm not sure about that, so we'll see tomorrow. Now, moving on to the topic. White Pride Worldwide, a very known slogan that has been adopted by many independent circles that just feel that instinct of uniting, of fighting for the preservation of our kind, of the people of European descent, very broadly speaking. Oftentimes I think that there is a lot of confusion in understanding healthy tribalism and the foundation of collectivism itself. We can observe it when it comes to the politics. Oftentimes young people, our young men, are bamboozled into choosing two extremely different opposites, like for instance libertarianism that offers you maximum of freedom, at least on paper. We're talking about ideology itself, right? So ideologically it offers you this idea of unlimited freedom, of you associating yourself with whoever you feel like, with no taxation, or at least very minimum in certain denominations of libertarianism, let's say. Some people would argue that libertarianism is only the anarcho-capitalism. Some people will classify minarchism as part of the libertarianism, meaning like the minimal government, just like the whatever is necessarily, like the army, the representation, and that's it. Nothing else that is being run by the government. Things like that, right? So you have this ultra individualism. Everyone is just left to their own devices. There is no collectivism, at least nothing that is being imposed on society. You can just freely associate. And this, of course, is a perfect solution for the international Jewry that will remain inevitably very well organized on the international level. And they would love this kind of a solution. It would be very convenient for them to have us disorganized, singled out. Because, of course, us singled out we are making, we are becoming an easy prey for a very well-organized collective. They can take us one by one. This is how some wars were won in the history, where a smaller army was dealing with a much larger army. They would just simply tackle them, small group at the time, little by little, singled out their soldiers. Call one soldier at a time, or create like some narrow passage so only one soldier of their enemy can come inside, and they can easily overwhelm that one individual and wait for another one to come and overwhelm that individual, and the circle continues until they will completely annihilate their enemy. So this lesson from history should be extremely important for us to learn. This hypothetical scenario itself should be always taken into consideration when thinking about ideology. If we are going to willingly just isolate ourselves, just because we are in a way so antisocial these days, and that's not a coincidence that libertarianism gained the most popularity in America in modern times, pretty much. So it's because of the vast lands in America, where you can be really far away from other people, where you can actually purchase a big parcel of land, live there by yourself, do whatever you feel like, because there's no restrictions when it comes to territory. Well, at least, you know, not many restrictions, right? Especially for you as an individual, for your needs, it's more than enough. You can just construct whatever you feel like there, And you can have your own little paradise. You can have your own castle, and you can feel like a king of that castle. This in itself creates a society that is becoming a little bit antisocial. If you add technology to that, that intensifies the antisocialness. And people are becoming allergic to interacting with others. They're becoming allergic to having to deal with others' character. They treat their home as something extremely private. They don't want to have any guests in it. Even though they have wonderful, sometimes wonderful houses, maybe sometimes they're unkept and messy, but big houses, they could easily have some guests if they could, if they only would put some effort into maintaining, let's say, the living room or the guest area. And they could easily spend time with their friends, with their neighbors, with their some other people, with their family as well, in that particular area of their own home. But they don't feel like it, because they feel like this is intrusive, that someone is stepping into their private area. They are obsessed. They are becoming obsessed with privacy. They rather go to some corporation, let's say to a bar, or rent a specific room in that serves this kind of a purpose. Rent a conference room, let's say, and organize events there. Feeling safe that no one is able to see their private stuff, that no one is able to put their nose in their business. This is very unhealthy, because it creates huge division between people. It doesn't allow to build bond. I do remember ever since I was a kid, there was still this tradition, let's say, of inviting each other to our parents' home. And it was very exciting to see your friend's room, to see what they are interested in, to see their favorite games, their favorite toys, their creations, if they like to do some drawings, or maybe they're into music. You could learn more about that person, and you could become closer. And it was equally exciting to invite your friend or someone that you trusted into your own room and show them your stuff, your world. You could share a piece of you with someone that you liked, that someone that you shared some interests with. That in itself created a stronger bond than those friendships that were based only on living outside, on going into the bars, on going into restaurants, and just relying on corporate world to provide you with the surface to thrive in, provide you with the area, with all the things for you to use. It's also, I think it also motivates you to be a good host and provide some basic things for your guests, like, you know, at least a glass of water and a small snack, let's say, or choose an interesting music to play so the vibe is very satisfying for you to talk in the room. This also prepares you for being more romantic in the future, for knowing how to deal with dating, how to actually invite women into your own area rather than just relying yet again just on the corporate world and being with her in expensive restaurants and things like that, right? Where maybe you cannot even hear each other properly because of loud music, loud noises, and all the people surrounding you. I think that this is very important to always have in mind, Because if you are going to become very antisocial, if we are going to be very sexually weird in the sense that there is no romantic side to our sexuality, and we're just following the path of this modern Hollywood soulless dating lifestyle, where everything is either about sex or sex itself without any additional feelings to it, or everything is about consumerism. This lays foundation for unhealthy relationships, and unhealthy relationships, on the other hand, are foundational for sick society, where everyone is distant, where there is a lot of divorces, because you never get the chance to actually bond well with your female partner. A society that lacks in friendships is very distant to each other. And in a way, we can see it today. People aren't really interested in other humans, oftentimes. They have their eyes glued to the phone. They do everything through electronics. They are dependent on technology, fully dependent to the point that they wouldn't be able to have any friendships or any interactions without it. They come home and they watch content. They consume content rather than being part of something, being part of a social circle, be having friends, having romantic relationships, and so on, right? That's the problem. So, because of that, people don't activate that tribalistic feeling. Everything is tied together. You cannot have tribalism without being social. You cannot have a healthy collective without people liking each other. Of course, not everyone will like each other. There's always going to be tensions and people that just rub each other the wrong way, some animosities and conflicts and so on, right? But knowing how to deal with that, minimalizing those kind of negative feelings, and surrounding yourself with people that you like. So then you feel like you like people, and it's more natural for you to want to build something with them. If you want to build something with them, then you're more likely to be a nationalist. It's not a coincidence that, for instance, one of the foundation for nationalist movements is the active club, where the boys get together and they get to be the bad boys with good habits. Boys who don't obey the rule of the corporations and modern degenerate governments, but they have good habits on their own. They are disciplined to do good productive things, to organize collectives based on very productive activities, like fighting with each other, sparring, training, not doing drugs, not listening to degenerate rap, sub-Saharan music, and not going to a corporation and consume goy slop, or watch football and things like that, right? Or cause chaos on the street, like hooligans in Europe oftentimes do during soccer match. Those kind of things. And then on the other hand, we have that second option, the kosher option, the other extreme for the young people, which is actually collective, meaning communism. But this collectivism is twisted in such a way that everything revolves around you giving up your identity, giving up your soul, and wanting to submit to a machine that drains you from everything in hopes that it will redistribute everything equally to others, so you can feel on an equal level with everyone else. This in itself is very well designed to hit our hearts, our Aryan hearts, because deep inside, we do have this necessity to be equal to others. However, those others are those of our kin. That's the whole, that's the quintessence of brotherhood. Where we are brothers, where we unite as brothers, we are equal, at least in that specific dynamic. We are all men doing our thing. No one is more important than some other guy. There's no weird hierarchy. We are just trying to do our best to imitate good behavior and to take care of each other. This can be actually, this kind of brotherhood can be observed yet again in those fight clubs, or, well, in those active clubs, where you have guys just sparring with each other, training with each other, giving each other tips on how to do better. Everyone is doing their best to maintain good shape. This kind of equality is confused in communistic interpretation and taken for something that is noble, erasing the true goal in this kind of equality, because equality in itself is not the goal on its own. It's just means to create a healthy society where men don't trip on their ego, don't have power trip moments, and they are capable of just having that normal human interaction with their own brothers. So first of all, in communism, of course, we are divorced from race itself, because it stands on very strong foundations of universalism. And universalism is already very deeply engraved into us, which makes it even more challenging, because it makes it further, it makes it seem further natural to us because of that universalist conditioning, with the addition of us wanting to feel like brothers. So we're comrades and we're all equal. We need to have this universal equality. So in that sense, communism feels like ultimate good, like an ultimate goal for humanity to have, right? And then the fact that there's no stated goal where this goes. So we're just equal. In reality, we're just equally miserable, equally poor. That's how it always goes in communism. Avoiding the elephant in the room, who is going to redistribute the resources? Obviously, that's a task for the international jury. So yet again, we can see that they are thriving off those necessities in us. On one hand, to be individualistic, on the other hand, to have a brotherhood. And they have those two conflicting, very opposing ideologies that are being pushed on our youth, so they can always position themselves, they meaning the international jury, as the administrators, as the ones who will have full control. They either have a full advantage over us, split into individuals, singled out, they as the collective, very well organized collective on the international level, or they are the ones who are redistributing all the goods, all the resources, and they are in charge of the governments of the communistic states, of the communist states. So that way, we stay equally miserable, equally poor, equally enslaved, with just enough of resources to survive, maybe, you know, a loaf of bread every day with... Now, it's not even going to be any animal products. Most likely, they would prepare for us some artificial butter made from... produced in lab and, you know, things like that, right? Just enough for us to survive while they have take the fruits of all the labor. That's how it goes. Holokov with a $5 investment. Appreciate that, brother. Romans to you. Crazy thing is, most libertarians won't call out the destruction of our race, but bizarrely take issue with their private data. So their logic says personal data is property, but their DNA is not. Very good point. The only value they often have is sound money. We should study the Third Reich monetary system, which even better, that's an area we could benefit from. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that is a very good observation. You know, obviously, both Marxism and libertarianism is limited to materialistic goods. It's full-on materialism without any concern about the soul, about the genetics, about us as human beings. And that's what makes them so similar to each other, despite those striking contrasts when it comes to the economical solution itself. Let's take a look at this latest post made by the White House. That's from yesterday. The propaganda seems to be very in your face these days. And it's also evident that they're trying to score some brownie points with specifically white Americans. They're showing this white guy, very popular in the memes. I'm actually not sure if he has a name or not, if he has been given a name, but everyone recognizes the guy, right, with the beard, the blonde guy, very common, oftentimes portrayed as a based guy, representing those rightful pro-white sentiments in most of the memes that he appears in. And now he is used by the White House to thank the president. Thank you for changing my life. Changing... It's just... No shame in this propaganda. It's literally Orwellian style of propaganda these days in America. And then Mr. President, who is portrayed as very youthful, much younger appearing than he actually is, very based and looking very respectable, like a true white American. And he is saying, I'm literally just saving America. This is more accurate, by the way. Thank you for changing my life. You're literally too retarded to understand I'm bankrupting this country and your grandkids on behalf of Israel. That's more accurate. Very accurate. And also, the depiction of the supporter of Trump is way more accurate as a retarded boomer who lost his mind and turned off his thinking. All he can do is just suck up to Mr. President just because he has an R in front of his name. Whoever is a Republican, they will just keep supporting just because. For even though we can clearly see how destructive this presidency really is. And what is the true goal of this presidency, right? That it really just serves the Jews, not only Israel itself. And I guess this small little detail is the actual inaccuracy in this whole meme, because it's not on behalf of Israel, it's on behalf of the international Jewry, of all the Jews, not only living in Israel, but maybe especially those living in the United States. But of course, this translates into the all of the Jews all over the world, right? They all benefit because they are very tribalistic, they are very united. So we can see in here that they are trying to appeal to white Americans with this kind of a post. And the reason why this is possible for them to, let's say, get away with it to some extent, even though they are obviously highly criticized and there's a lot of people who are outraged by this, especially on X, right? There's just a lot of young generations who, people from young generations who are rightfully so attacking this and posting more representative meme. The boomers are still somewhat on this side, just like we saw with the elections in Kentucky, District number 4, where boomers unfortunately overwhelmingly voted for whoever Trump endorsed, this Ed Gallheim or whatever his last name is. They didn't vote for Massey, despite the fact that he actually was the one opposing the foreign wars. No wars promised by the president, and Massey was the only one who wanted to deliver that presidential promise from the presidential campaign. They still unite blindly behind Trump because they don't have that healthy sense of tribalism. Their tribalism evolves around bowing down to whoever has the social status and who is portrayed as patriot, whatever that would mean, because patriot in itself is a very vague term that oftentimes means something quite the opposite to someone who actually would care about the nation. A patriot in modern times usually is someone who just presents himself as pro that nation that he represents, that he likes to put on, you know, a flag, and he likes to surround himself with some symbolism that will activate that patriotic feeling in people. And he will urge people to just obey the legal aspect of that country without any soul in it. No concern for actual history of the country, for actual genetics of the country, for actual people of the country. The soul, the culture, none of that. It's only purely materialistic, yet again, just like we saw in regards to libertarianism and communism. Everything has been desolified, let's say. The soul was drained from every single political ideology these days. And everything is 100% materialistic. So patriotism is just obeying the law of your country, respecting the legality, if that country, or rather officials of that country, oftentimes treasonous officials, will decide that Mr. Makoko from Congo all of a sudden is American, then you respect that because you're a patriot and you respect those treasonous officials who give them the paper. Well, it's a paper. It has the American stamp on it. Well, he has the American paper, so he is as American as us, as long as he does legally. That's pretty much the essence of modern patriotism. And such a blind obedience to an institution is contrarian to tribalism, because really you're not part of any tribe. You're just obeying an institution. You're just a follower. You don't have any sense of community. You mean nothing. You're just a peasant who does his thing, a cattle who follows orders. That's it. That's not a tribe. You don't have any tribe. Of course, this in itself didn't come out of nowhere. It stands on very firm foundations of universalism, of conditioning us to be obedient in regards to the institution, like for instance, the churches themselves, the way they are structured, the Christian churches, is by having us as obedient church mice going there, listening to whatever they tell us. We obey that and we feel like we're connected to the God, and we feel like we're part of a community just because they happen to talk about the God, and there is a community that goes to that same church that look like us, or at least it used to be the case. This was a very false feeling of having a community and believing in God. In reality, they created godless, rootless, obedient sheep that is only capable of listening to an institution. And this is exactly what we have today. The results couldn't be clearer if you look at both sides of the political spectrum, both the right wing and the left wing. The right wing obeys the government, especially when it's run by the patriots. The patriots are in control, don't worry. Trust the plan, Goy. As long as everything is, as long as it's legally, everything is fine. And then on the other hand, you have left wing, who is more likely to obey to some authority of institutions that portray themselves as having credibility when it comes to science and social acceptance and so on. So, for instance, they will be more likely to listen to academia, to scientists, you know. The so-called 99 scientists agree that the climate change is real, which even that is not true. You know, trust the science, take the vaccine, poison yourself, Goy. Things like that, right? So, from both angles, from every single side that you see, there's no tribalism. It has been forbidden in a way. And this in itself is also part of the universalist ideology that we have. Christianity obviously does not promote tribalism, to say the least. If anything, oftentimes they will demonize it because we are all the same in the eyes of the God, right? Of the universalist God, of the nameless God. We're all the same. We all should just unite under the banner of that specific ideology, of that specific religion. As long as you obey to an institution, as long as you obey to certain way of thinking, certain way of worshiping, then we're all brothers in Christ. That is a very serious problem that cannot be ignored, because without tackling the source, and in this case this is the source of conditioning, the foundation of the universalist mindset that our people have today, we'll never understand the masses. We'll never understand the average Joe Schmo. And I think it's easy to be blinded by certain outliers who come from that same conditioning, but their natural instincts were so strong and so healthy that they were able to lift themselves above this conscious conditioning, but they cannot let go that religious aspect. It's kind of like listening to Michael Jackson. You know, when I was a kid, I do remember that Michael Jackson was actually still popular in Europe. I guess, you know, like in Europe, we have a tendency to listen to slightly older music coming from the United States as kind of like legitimizing the legacy of a certain artist. You know, oh, this guy, you know, from 80s or from 90s, you know, from America. So let's listen to this guy. I do remember particularly there's this one travel on a bus. That I traveled to a village where my family, where we visited certain members of my family that lived there, and that was like a pretty big trip, one of the biggest ones when I was a kid. And on that bus, there was this very unique voice of Michael Jackson, and I could get very sentimental, you know, I could get very nostalgic and remind myself this particular memory from my childhood and treat that music as our music because, you know, despite the fact that it was produced by a Jewish music industry using a sub-Saharan individual, meaning Michael Jackson, even though he tried as much as he could to portray himself as one of us, let's say. And I could say, oh, this is our music because I have fond memories of it. I'm emotionally attached to that music. And in a way, you know, Michael Jackson was one of the very few examples of sub-Saharan music for white people specifically, right? It was catered to white people. He was named King of the Pop because it was listenable to white people. It was catchy, this kind of a thing. But I have matured. I have developed my taste in music. And actually, I no longer would be able to enjoy it. I don't consider Michael Jackson to be worth listening. Sure, I can recognize that his voice was interesting, was unique and interesting, without a question. But why would I listen, why would I clog my space with this kind of an artist when I can fill myself with more cultured music, with classical music, or at least with some Aryan artists? Even if that's pop music, it's still better when it's coming from our people. Or preferably, you know, like a little bit more ambitious than pop, right? Just some interesting songs and with deep lyrics about life and, you know, things like that. So there is absolutely this process of maturing and developing and overcoming things that we're just used to treat as our own and realizing that we're not making any progress if we're just going to be stuck to whatever feels nostalgic to us, to whatever we feel attached to, just because of it on its own, right? And I think that this is a very important process that makes us grow as a collective, and then we can restore even more of our greatness, restore our true spirit, going deeper and deeper and finding out how interesting things really were, how interesting ideology was hidden in Greek philosophy, for instance, in the Roman way of thinking, and how this enabled our people to have those thriving empires and societies back in the days in antiquity, how it enabled Europe to flourish, to build the foundations of the Western civilizations, as opposed to modern times where we're just stagnating, at least. We are benefiting off what was built thousands of years ago. And slowly, little by little, we are moving away from it to our detriment. Technology is advancing, for sure, because science, this is the way science works, but not our cultural sphere, not our societies, spiritually speaking. And I think modern times are the best examples of it. Again, this didn't happen overnight. This is one of the biggest mistakes that people tend to commit who just woke up, let's say, to the Jewish question. They think, or maybe, I don't know what they think exactly, but they tend to go on a shortcut and just present the situation as if everything started in the 60s or everything started with the boomers and the boomers are to blame for everything. The reason why we are so critical about the boomers is because they are they have been very detrimental to our future, and a lot of them, probably majority of them, sadly, don't want to admit it. They don't see it. They are stuck in their degeneracy. Many of them were hippies. Many of them were just going along with all those revolutionary changes that happened back in the days, and the bad changes. The diversification, let's say, of our countries, right? But the reason why they had this mentality is because of the previous conditionings and because of the previous generations that allowed such a generation like boomers to flourish. And we can go on and on and on in the past, and we'll encounter that this was a very graduate, very patient process. That's why the Jews are so successful, because they are capable of planning long term. They are planning things out ahead of times, and they are very consequential. They are very methodical and very patient in a way. And this is not because they are some geniuses or they have some supernatural powers. It's precisely because they are so tribalistic, because they have this collective way of thinking. If you have a collective way of thinking, you're not obsessed with what is going to happen during your lifetime, with what you will have as an individual. We can see among our people, unfortunately, this is the case. We have some self-appointed leaders, let's say, you know, Richard Spencer. He's coming in. Well, he just wants to steal the show. He's just interested in having the spotlight, to the point that he's willing to sell his soul and now contradict us and attack his own people just because that gives him continuity, that gives him an opportunity to still remain somewhat relevant, let's say, in the public scene, because he differentiates himself from others, right? This kind of a thing, this kind of a trick. So he is a quintessence of individualistic guy who is just all about himself. He's a self-serving narcissist. There's no thinking ahead. And with leaders like that, we are doomed. It's not a coincidence why this movement, so-called alt-right, failed, because of guys like Richard Spencer, who are absolute scumbags, who only think about their own benefit, who actually do not care about our future. They couldn't care less. They don't have that mentality, that tribal mentality. That's the problem. Meanwhile, the Jew does. That's one thing that we have to admit. They do think collectively. Kerem, welcome, brother. I see that we have an investment of $5 from Kerem. Appreciate that, brother. Romans to you. Michael Jackson named the Jew, probably was murdered for it, and is one of the greatest modern musicians. I grant perpetual postmodern honorary Aryan status. I do agree with that. Yes, it is very interesting indeed that he was. He was an interesting individual, without a single doubt. I just don't think that it's healthy for us to listen to artists who are not us, and especially when we develop this like nostalgic relationship to their creation. So that would be my main point here with Michael Jackson. However, I'm not hating on the guy as an individual because you're right, he did. Named the Jew, it seemed like he did. He had this weird, there was something in him, right? Like he was not okay with being a Negro. He wanted to be someone else. Maybe partially his tough childhood was something that created in him that spirit that he was slapped so many times by his tyrannical father. To the point that he just saw something else, and he wanted to become an Aryan, and he was not okay with what's happening in the music industry, and he was willing to call out the Jew. However, on the other hand, let's remember that it is absolutely possible that both things are true. Both things may be true in the sense that the accusations against him. That the Jews make that, he was molesting children and things like that. That could be true. He was extremely weird, and given the environment that he was in, I wouldn't be surprised if he would have such a weird sexual tendency of liking little children, adopting white children, and having little children sleep over at his house. There was definitely something wrong, many things wrong with the guy. Let's just, remember always about the bigger picture. But yes, I do agree with your points. School of Fish, welcome, brother. Robert E. Pyle, welcome, brother. Oh, it's a classical music that I'm playing. It's Miguel Johnson, that's the one that is playing right now. There's just different composers. Serbian Bull, welcome, brother. White Unite the World, welcome. All right, so continuing on this topic of Orwellian levels of propaganda coming from the White House and the scumbag Trump, who is a sellout and a loser who only can suck Jewish cock and while destroying America. Let's take a look at this face. Drained. Any remainings of soul has been drained completely. And this is a true picture. It's Netanyahu's bitch, but in reality, he's just a bitch of the Jews. There's no soul in that individual. And this is the ballroom that they are now building in the White House. This looks so surreal. It's so unserious to delegate all the resources into those renovations while the Americans are struggling financially speaking. But what is even more concerning in here is the fact that most likely this is under the inspection of some Jews who will have a great opportunity to install spying devices all over. If there's a construction, there's always an underground foundation, and they can maybe construct some tunnels, secret tunnels that will lead from the synagogue straight to the White House, let's say. It's absolutely possible. It's not a crazy conspiracy theory. I think that now that we live in 2026, after experiencing all those things that would previously seem crazy, unimaginable, like the COVID era, let's say, the crazy underground Jews in the New York City with stained mattress, the levels of evil in Israel committed by the Jews, all those things together have to make us realize that they won't stop at nothing. They are capable of going full force and doing whatever it takes for them to have full control over the world. If they're pushing so hard for this new ballroom to the point that they are creating some weird, sloppy assassination attempts yet again, this time no catch-up though, they are absolutely desperate to have a pretext to do something, to install some weird spying devices, connections, tunnels. We don't know exactly. It's just speculation, but there is something in the water for sure. And of course, you know, tying to this, thank you for changing my life, right? I'm literally saving America. Yet, of course, we remember Trump's science law to assist families of Holocaust victims. It's always serving the Jews over and over again while shitting on Americans, literally telling you that he doesn't even think about you having to deal with high gas prices and all the economical struggles. He doesn't think about it. I don't care. I just want to destroy Iran because that's the enemy of the Jews and I serve the Jews on my knees. That's the soulless sellout Trump for you. Oh yeah, did I turn you into a Zionist with my low IQ anti-Semitism? This low IQ anti-Semitism, actually speaking of, it's actually an interesting psyop to combat, you know, anti-Semitism in this sneaky way. Of course, someone not being okay with low IQ anti-Semitism is not okay with anti-Semitism, period. That's pretty much what it boils down to. Have you ever seen people complaining about the IQ level of any other propaganda that goes against some other groups? Like, for instance, there's so many people that are being tired of Indians. Indians are repulsive. No one likes Indians. They're only people who pretend to like them because of political correctness. And there is so much, I would say majority, like 95% of anti-Indian content is absolutely low IQ slop, let's say, right? But it's funny and it's accurate with, you know, poop all over and smelly curry and Indian being bad truck drivers, which is actually very accurate. But yeah, it's like poop and more poop, right? That's the anti-Indian narrative. No one complains about low IQ anti-Pajirism. No one has an issue with that, because they know that it's hard to combat those sentiments against Indians. They rather concentrate their resources on combating anti-Semitism. So they will invent this, you know, low IQ anti-Semitism. But we need all sorts of anti-Semitism. I'm a big proponent of high IQ core of our people and overall building a high IQ foundations of our own social structures. But when it comes to the narrative against our enemies, we need diversity of it. We need all sorts of levels of IQ of it. We need high IQ anti-Semitism. We need low IQ anti-Semitism. We need everything together because it's effective. Low IQ anti-Semitism will get into some certain demographics, and funny content usually is kind of low IQ, but everyone needs humor, at least a little bit of it, right? Some dose of it. So let's not fall for this, you know, Fed Fuentes psyop that all of a sudden, you know, he is trying to fight for high IQ somehow. The same guy who literally protects a Jewish pedophile Epstein and tells us that Epstein had aura and he was actually not a pedophile. The same crowd of people that make jokes about raping people, raping women and doing some weird things. People who dox others. People who constantly counter-signal pro-white activists. The same ones are now going to complain about the IQ level of the narrative. That's just pathetic. All right, so when we are criticizing trends among our people, like let's say, rightfully so, we are going hard against mud sharks, right? It's mostly because we want to give a very clear signal what is socially acceptable and what is not, organically speaking, coming from our people, right? Because there's no healthy path that is being given to our people from the mainstream, we have to produce it ourselves. But also, we have to remember that a lot of those behaviors are being forced on our people. Like this here, those are just schoolgirls from Germany. And Germany has a program for schoolgirls to get to know each other with the 30-year-old or so immigrants, so-called immigrants, invaders. So it's the government itself literally forcing our people to integrate with the savages. So it's not like you can attack those girls for participating in it, because girls are just being girls, they're just following social trends and they are just doing whatever they are told by their teachers, right? Countless examples of it like this. And this is also a part of healthy tribalism, to understand our differences. This weird sentiment that is dropping all of the frustrations on the opposite gender and hating women for being woman is unbecoming. It's not something that we can afford. There is no white race without white women. There is no white race without white men. We need to stay civil about it, and we cannot tolerate bad behavior coming from whoever that would be, right? It's not like the women are being given pass just because they're a woman and they can be sluts and stupid. No, but we need to understand that they're always going to be different. Women are never going to be men. They don't have that counter-conformistic nature. They are more likely to obey. So that's very important to have in mind. And for instance, I'll give you an example of healthy balance, let's say, in regards to attacking females and not attacking them. Because it seems like whatever a white woman will do, they always get backlash from our people. They are trying to get some attention from us, and they are trying to just produce some content for attention of white males, and they get attacked because, oh, you're just seeking attention, you're an attention whore. But that's female nature. I think that we should be happy that females are just being females, and instead of trying to grab an attention of some invaders, right, they are trying to grab an attention of our own man, right? That's the healthy sentiment to have. Now, it is on you if you treat that woman too serious, and just because she is wrapping herself with some National Socialist symbolism, or she is, proclaiming to be very pro-white, all of a sudden you think that she's some sort of a scholar and she is 100% for real with that ideology. That's on you. You don't understand female nature. You think that this is something serious rather than her just trying to find a man. But the fact that she is trying to grab an attention of a pro of a nationalist white man, that in itself indicates that she has some healthy sentiments, that she has some healthy instincts, because at least she knows what kind of man she needs in her life. And because of that, she should not be attacked. She just shouldn't be taken seriously. She shouldn't, our women should not be the leaders. Women are not designed to lead movements. If all of a sudden popularity of a woman explodes just because she is pro-white and she proclaims her views to the whole world, that is not her fault. It's a fault of all those weak men who elevate the status of that woman because they're so desperate for presence of a female. Let's put it this way, right? And then if a female is elevated so quickly, it's hard to resist for her to not do something stupid, to not grift off that, to not make money, to not use that status and just, ride a cock carousel or just be all over the place and try to do weird things. It's because of weak men who let her do it. It's kind of like, she is unconsciously shit testing everyone. So as long as we're not just going to take women too serious, we can be nice to them, just us for a woman, right? For being on the right side of the history, let's put it this way, right? And attack those women who actually deserve backlash. And it's not necessarily for us to count on the fact that this woman will change because she will see some opinions of men that she doesn't care about. Because, like if we're talking about the normie female, the last thing that she will care about is an opinion of some internet Nazis, let's say, right? She's so deeply embedded in the system that all she will care about is the brownie points coming from the mainstream society, from whatever is in the mainstream. That's the place where she's scoring the brownie points, and those are the brownie points that she counts on. We're not going to change her perception necessarily, but we're going to send a signal to the society that this is not okay. You can be a whore, you can be a mud shark, but you're not going to get our acceptance. This is something that is irreversible. And this should be a very strong signal to smart females who know who they should value. They should value their own strong man, not some weak, obedient faggots, and not the system, not the institutions. Smart female should understand instinctually and subconsciously that a strong man of her own kind is the only thing that matters. Her father, if she had a good father figure, her father's opinion matter. A strong man of her kin, his opinion matters. A brotherhood, a strong brotherhood from her nation, the opinion of that brotherhood matters. But not an opinion of some twat who obeys this cuckery, who is afraid to be called racist. This doesn't matter. Not the opinion of some Jews, Dr. Shlomo, who is trying to indoctrinate her to become an OnlyFans whore. Not an opinion of all those institutions that work overtime against us. An opinion of a church that teaches us how to wash Negro feet. It doesn't matter. So let's give here two striking contrasts. One female is going to be the latter, the one that we will criticize only for to make an example out of her for others, but not really caring about this woman in particular. As a matter of fact, most likely it's only the best for our race if she will go away, because natural selection is a thing. We have to always appreciate the mechanism of natural selection, the fact that we haven't have to a bigger degree, natural selection was blocked in our societies due to this ultra altruistic society where we always prioritized help to the poor people. And usually poor people in developed societies are those who are problematic, pathological, riddled with addictions, weaknesses. And we were sponsoring the children of those kind of people. We were literally funding our own pollution, the rot within our own race. That's pretty much what this universalist, good Christian attitude serves for. And this was a very long process. This in itself is also part of this process of making us weaker. This helping, some families of addicts and trying to maintain like the worst kinds of our kind, the people that are low IQ, people that are lazy. This makes our race worse. So now that we have this full-on attack against our people, one positive out of it may be the loss of the fat that is slowing us down, meaning that loss of all those rotten individuals and removing them from our gene pool. Oftentimes they remove themselves, right, by making the choices of sleeping with monkeys and things like that. We should, in a way, see this as a blessing in disguise. So this is an example here.
Tell them where you're from right now.
I'm reported in Sebring.
Okay, man. Hey, man, we out here to separate, man. Give us your honest opinion now.
Oh, my God.
So that's you.
Oh my God.
1 out of 10.
20.
That'd
be
20.
That'd be good as fuck.
That'd be 20. That'd be good as fuck.
My friend.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Hold on a second.
20.
Let's see this exhibit.
That'd be 20.
Look at those tattoos. Look at that big cross on her chest. Isn't that something, huh? Well, this is exactly kind of a specimen that will not serve our race in the long run. There's just simply no way. Those people don't change. People who make so many bad choices, very rarely, it's a result of some traumas, you know, like accumulation of traumas. Because even if someone has a lot of traumas, if they are of a solid character, they are usually still capable of at least avoiding all of the bad choices. They will make some bad choices, inevitably, right? Because of the lack of guidance in their life, because of some other issues, because of some traumas. But they will not make all of the bad choices. If someone makes all of the bad choices, nasty, tasteless tattoos, dating monkeys, talking like a monkey, doing weird things, those are people that we cannot help. We are better off without those individuals. Those kind of specimens are only going to slow us down. They're going to make our race dumber. They're going to invite potential enemies because they are on their level, on their spiritual, mental, and intellectual level. So they will feel more at home hanging out with monkeys rather than with our own kind. And if such is the case, then us granting them access to our societies just because of their race alone will make us weak because we allow them to invite their own kind, right? Their own buddies and boyfriends and stuff like that. So yeah, we shame that individual to make an example out of her, to make sure that other women or other girls will see that and will be more likely to be a little bit aware, right? Okay, she receives a lot of backlash. All those men, all those healthy men are against her. I don't want to be like her. Easy choice. Now let's see Exhibit B. Skull mask, Burger King crown, many red flags, right? Attention, I need attention. She has "I need attention" written all over her, without a single doubt. But it's a good thing that she's choosing this crowd, that she's exhibiting her very... that she knows what, let's say, is appreciated, genetically speaking, right? And she's here exhibiting her very blue eyes. She's making sure that they are very visible. And she actually makes, like, cute faces, too, so. So, this indicates instinctual health. This indicates that she knows what good men want. And she knows how to appeal to them. This is pretty much a feminine nature in a nutshell, right? The whole purpose of a female is to find a strong man. That's what it's all about. And if she is playing into our ideologies, if she is putting concern into the preservation of the European bloodline, if she is into those kind of vibes that are now growing in popularity all over the internet, that's a good thing. She shouldn't be attacked for that. But again, she shouldn't be taken seriously. Is she a scholar? Do you think that she will be able to have an intellectual conversation about it? No. Do you think that she will make some wise choices the moment she will be elevated and she will be made a queen of the white race? Of course not. Most likely she will do a lot of damage once given high status. But that's up to the man to act accordingly, right? Hopefully there's just some white nationalist who is able to scoop up this woman and give her a good life and produce a good family with her, good offsprings, continue the genetics that she is exhibiting in here. That's what it's all about. And this woman can be supportive, right? It's not only about their personal interests. It's not only about their personal needs. But again, we just cannot take them too seriously. And as long as we do that, as long as we stick to that, everything is in its right place. And we are all going to be happy and we are going to have a great collective. Because we know our place, right? We know everyone's place. That's pretty much what it boils down to. Crema de la cream coffee, welcome. Brad C. 1988, welcome, brother. I love Jesus Christ, welcome. This is one other pretty... I'll have to end soon because the beer hall starts. And by the way, I do invite everyone to the beer hall on X platform. We are doing it every single Sunday, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time. I'll have to be a little bit better at starting those streams earlier. I was late today because of this... colored people doing a lot of weird things on the freeways. But here's yet another one example of how healthy tribalism acts in reality. So there are some things that cannot be tolerated. We are not the same as some sub-Saharans or some savages that will defend their own no matter what, just because they see that it's their own kind and they will defend them. We are not like that, and we'll never be like that. So this oversimplification, now especially in regards to Chad the Builder situation, where people are trying to be ultra-tribalistic, and they are trying to say that, hey, the only good solution here is to stand behind a white man no matter what. It's not a good solution. It's too oversimplified. It is indeed very important for us to be tribalistic and to have an ability to support each other, even if we disagree with each other. I am very critical of Chad the Builder, primarily because of the way he was conducting the business, because it was very evident that he wasn't really ideological, rather he saw that as a business opportunity, and he was promoting casinos to his audience. And his audience, obviously, predominantly white young men, right, who see this well-built guy confronting some Negroes on the street, and they are impressed. And then the next thing they see, he's promoting gambling. Not only an addiction, but also a way to lose your money to a shady business. That's the main issue, my issue with him. Not the fact that he is saying the N-word, because that shouldn't be an issue to anyone, right? Not everyone has to do it. Some people may just... it may not be their style, right? Overdoing it is definitely cringe, and usually it's an indication of some problems, like being autistic. Oftentimes, it's not related to our cause at all. The trend was started with some autistic streamers who just seek to provoke people. They seek attention and they don't care about anything else. And they would be the ones who started this trend of, you know, saying the N-word with a hard R over and over again just because they knew that it's so controversial that they are going to be in a spotlight, right? So this is just, you know, to have in mind. However, if the system goes against our own guy just, you know, for saying the N-word or for defending himself from a violent monkey, then sure, we should be on his side. We definitely shouldn't be laughing it off like Sayo Fuentes does, right? He always stands on the right, on the wrong side of the history. He always counter-signals whoever is not kissing his ring. That's just a very typical for him. But it's not a right position to have to just stand blindly on the side of some grifter. Because let's not kid ourselves. Chud the Builder was just Chud the grifter. He may, however, serve our cause a little bit if he's not going to be punished for protecting himself. I don't know exactly what happened because I was not interested in this case. I don't want to discuss details of whether he was in the right or not. The problem is multi-layered because, you know, the type of content he was making, he was too provocative. The thing is that it's not only him exercising the freedom of speech, but rather going after some random people minding their own business. This is just not something that we should do. This is unbecoming for us to just seek trouble on the street, to approach some random homeless people and talk shit to them. This is not an Aryan behavior, okay? This is a behavior of a grifter, of someone who is seeking for attention. Let's make it clear, okay? Now, the most important thing about it, however, is the injustice coming from the system. The fact that, for instance, Carmelo Anthony, the Negro who stabbed a 17-year-old white boy to death with a knife, received a bond of $250,000. Meanwhile, Chud the Builder received five times that, right? $1,250,000, if I'm not mistaking the numbers, but something like that. So that in itself is injustice. This we need to point out. I don't recommend anyone to donate his money to this guy. We just should combat the legalistic aspect of it alone. We should point out how the system is designed to go after white people and protect the Negroes, protect everyone else who's against us, right? This is the only aspect that matters. Now, when it comes to the strategy of always taking the side of our own, it's ridiculous. It's low IQ, it's unbecoming, it's un-Aryan. Think about this situation in here. How to Catch a Predator. It was a white guy. At least I think he was not Jewish in this particular case. But let's, of course, they are really bad apples, right, in our basket, of course. There's just not that many of them compared to other races, but there are. No one is denying that. So a white pedophile. Are we going to side with the pedophile because of this rule that we always side with our own? Let's say this white pedophile will rape little children in Thailand, let's say. Really, we're going to take a side of a white pedophile? Of course not, right? And I'm not suggesting that anyone who is promoting this kind of a strategy, that he would think that. But that's the problem. That's the logical fallacy in here. That if you are just oversimplifying this rule and you're just saying that, oh no, always take the white side, you're creating this kind of issue. We should know better than that. We are not low IQ tribalistic. Down with the low IQ tribalism. We should know better than that and we should be sophisticated about it. We should rather concentrate on serving our cause. What serves our cause, not look what serves our people in the sense of this individualistic sense, right? Because, again, we can look at this guy here. Hold on a second. This guy, right? He's of European descent. He's supposedly fully German. So are we going to side with this guy just because of his genetics? Of course not. He's a sellout.
He's the guy who is working overtime against us, against all of the people of European descent. So we have no sympathy for traitors, right? We have no sympathy for traitors. We have no sympathy for pedophiles. And we shouldn't have too much sympathy for grifters. We can only use cases like the case of Chad the Builder to expose the injustice in the legal system. That's it. It was slightly different situation with Shiloh Hendricks because, first of all, she was not a public figure. She was not the one looking for attention. She was not the one making money out of saying the N-word with the hard R. And I can't say that word just because I'm streaming to YouTube, just to be clear, right? I'm not afraid of the word. She was a mother, and she was protecting her child. And she was being followed and harassed for protecting her belongings and her well-being and her son. That was the case that absolutely required our unity. Something that also, of course, was counter-signaled by the same old malicious actors like Fuentes and all those gay clap gapers and all those nasty figures. But that was a very different case, okay? We need to have an understanding of it. It doesn't compare with Chad the Builder, Chad the Grifter. So, Shiloh Hendricks, absolutely. Because she is a mother, she was not looking for it, she was harassed. And her case can create a precedent for our people to finally feel emboldened to protect ourselves from those vicious animals. To not be afraid to call monkey a monkey. That's a different story than Chad the Grifter. So, in conclusion, when it comes to this tribalism, what is important is that we have an understanding of the higher purpose and higher goal in here. That we're not just uniting under an individual just because he's of our race. And I think I give plenty of examples, like with the sellout Trump and the pedophile, right? That this is just beyond ridiculous to have such an approach. But also to seek responsibility from that other person, meaning that reciprocation, it has to work both ways. A person needs to feel like they belong to our tribe, at least, right? And they are representing it somehow. And then we can stand up for that person. Then we can have that unity. We can help each other, right? That person who is in trouble is now going to serve us as an example of our representative, rather than just some random individual who just happened to be of our genetics. I hope that makes sense. We have, another $20 investment from Brad C. this time. Appreciate that, brother. Romans to you. Greetings, Tony Truce. Yes, indeed. We definitely need to be unapologetically proud to be white. Yes, absolutely. And we have another $5 investment from Kolokov. Appreciate that, brother. Romans to you once more. We do need to document and catalog mudsharks, not just to ensure we know who they are, but also to show our girls what the outcome is. Absolutely. Yes, yes. We do need to make all those bad apples, make an example out of those bad apples, right? Always make them serve the purpose. It's kind of like, you know, because think about it. The problem with this Christian charity that has taken over the West for a really long time is that it eliminates exactly this purpose, exactly the example that would teach the new generations. So if you go to a city and you see a beggar, you see some drunkard, right, who doesn't have any money and he's broke and he is homeless, the thing is that he's not completely useless, because he serves as a warning to the new generations that if you're not going to have a control over your vices, if you're not going to control yourself, if you're not going to have discipline, if you're not going to do something productive with your life, you are going to end up like this guy. Look at the misery of this guy. You don't want to be like him. And the fact that we have taken away those kind of examples largely through the charity, because we cannot stand our, you know, fragile Aryan altruism, cannot stand even the sight of a beggar and someone who is poor or someone who is homeless, we need to create all those charities that will give them housing, and we need to give them money on the street to the beggar, because it's a nice thing to do. That's a problem. No charity like this. Charity should be reserved to some unpredicted, unfortunate situations, like, let's say, a woman becoming a single mother because of some accident. She lost her husband and now she's struggling. She deserves charity. A kid losing his parents, right? We cannot expect a kid to just suck it and not receive any help from a healthy society. But not an adult man who is a drunk or someone who is lazy. None of that. That's the problem. And because of that hyper-extended charity within our societies, it was only natural, it felt only natural for our people to extend it even further into people who are just like us, but they just happened to be unprivileged and discriminated against and all those things, right? All the brown invaders, all refugees, we need to help them. That is the logical consequence of it. Healthy tribalism does not allow charity to destroy the society from within, to take away the natural selection and to take away those examples of rotten apples who will serve as a warning to the new generations. I can fix Burger King girl. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people who would like to try at least. That skinny tatted up girl is disgusting. I laugh at the thought of talking like a monkey to please a lesser sub-Saharan creature. Yes, it's absolutely pathetic. It's beyond pathetic. A 41 BMC, yes, that's also a good point. I don't know that much about RTTL, how well organized they are, but it's just a good example. They are actually doing something, right? They are working on a white community, and they are creating a precedent to make it legal for white people to organize themselves and to live among themselves. So donating to that cause does make sense. I don't know how much of a good leadership Arvel is. I just don't know much about it. But this is just a good example, right? Theoretically speaking, good cause, rather than just some grifter getting himself in trouble and not really serving any cause. So yes, very, very good. And one last meme that I have for you guys in here. Europe needs diversity. So here we have our own diversity. I'm a very proud representative of a very southernmost, continental at least, European, all the way back, all the way south, southern Spain, very desert region. It's like Arizona. We have our own diversity, as you can see, right? We have so many different nations. Within every single nation, obviously, there's a spectrum of different looks. That is a healthy diversity, right? That European race in itself has all the diversity that we need. We don't need brown skin of color just for the sake of it, just because we don't have it. We don't need that. We don't need wide bell pepper noses or whatever that would be that comes from outside of Europe, right? We don't need any of that. We have our own healthy amount of diversity. We have wonderful cultures, wonderful history. We are very well diverse, culturally speaking. We had our own interpretations of spirituality back in the days, back in antiquity. Greeks had their own mythology. Germanic tribes had their own. The Roman Empire had their own interpretation of the metaphysics. That's the true beauty of it. We do not need so-called diversity coming from outside of Europe and eliminating our own kind. That's literally what genocide is, that is happening in front of our eyes, little by little, and in such a sneaky manner that it's easy to laugh it off, because technically speaking, there is no war against our people, but there is if you look at the streets, if you look at the statistics, and if you look at the propaganda as well, right? Demonization of our people, promoting of race mixing, and promoting the so-called refugees and stuff like that. Feeble old man, welcome. So the way FTJ will work is that it will become a subscription-based only starting from tomorrow. I believe subscription is $5 per month, and the moment you will purchase this premium subscription, you will be able to use FTJ with all the functions. I don't know what is going to be the limitation for people who will not purchase it, but that's just the decision how it was made. Obviously, I have no say in this. This is a decision that was made by the owners of FTJ. All right. Well, with that being said, I am going to the beer hall. I hope to see some of you there. Beer hall space on X. And brothers, sisters, farewell. Thank you for your presence. And as always, eternal victory. Fratres, sorores, valete, gratias omnibus pro presentia, et ut semper. Ad victoriam aeternam.